The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Boker Tov, good morning. How are you?
Boker Tov. Yeah, I hear that you guys have also heard news about the funeral yesterday, and you're right, Howard. And there are currently no limitations as to how many people can actually attend the funeral. Fortunately, we in Israel have a relatively stable situation with regard to coronavirus. And in fact, children aged 5 to 11 are beginning to get vaccinated today. And the recent slight uptick in the number of people who are infected with corona apparently is mostly attributed to that age group, who are now going to become vaccinated, or going, their vaccines are being rolled out to them starting from today. And the Prime Minister is due to brief the Corona Cabinet later today. And of course, he will address the massive surge in Europe that we're experiencing and whether Israel needs to be a little bit more cautious at the borders about allowing people to come in from some of those European countries. If you haven't already heard it, in Austria, it is now legally required for people to be vaccinated. That is a legal requirement. And a senior minister in Germany has been quoted as saying that by the end of December, people in Germany will either be recovered, vaccinated, or dead. That was the comment that was made from Germany. So I don't know that I necessarily agree entirely with all of those comments, but just to give an idea of some of the action that's now being taken in a very extreme manner to try to deal with coronavirus. Luckily, as I've said before, we are relatively stable. Children will now be vaccinated. There's already talk about getting a fourth vaccine early in the new year. So fortunately, we're in a good situation. And of course, that's one of the reasons why there were so many attendees yesterday at Eli Kay's funeral. Mm. Very emotional scenes. I mean, just super emotional scenes at that funeral, and indeed at the Shiva visits as well. The sight of his body being carried on the shoulders of mourners as they attended the funeral towards the gravesite cannot go unnoticed by anybody who sees the pictures. You know, for people who haven't seen those pictures, it's certainly worthwhile tracking them and just having a look to see how emotional and how much energy really was generated at that particular funeral, not only mourning energy, because of course there was a great deal of mourning, but indeed thanksgiving for the life that Eli Kay lived and the person that he was. And indeed, Ayelet Shaked, our minister, our interior minister, visited the Shiva house, and she claims that she cried at the Shiva house yesterday when she heard the words of Eli Kay's grandfather when he described how he felt about the funeral and how people who were supporting the family, how the state of Israel turned out in order to support them and their family in their time of grief. And according to Ariella Chaked, she hasn't cried for some time, but yesterday she shed tears when she heard the words of Eli's grandfather as he described their experience. So some very, very emotional things that went down yesterday at the funeral. Just one or two other quick snippets. Israeli TV drama series, Tehran.
Yes,
early this morning, won an international Emmy for Best Drama Series. If you have not seen Tehran, it's worth seeing. And now officially, according to the people who decide on the Emmys, this is apparently a drama series of note. It follows an Iranian-born Mossad agent on an undercover mission in Iran to disable a nuclear reactor. I won't give any more away than that. No more spoilers. Just one more little snippet before we get into some of the main meat of some of the things that we want to talk about. The Israeli Squash Federation has appealed to the Court of Arbitration for Sport in Luzern in Switzerland in order to try and gain access to play in the squash world championships that are due to be held in 2 weeks' time in Malaysia. Now, this championship was due originally to have been held in New Zealand, but due to the COVID restrictions, the location has been changed to Malaysia. The Malaysian Squash Federation the Squash Rackets Association of Malaysia have not been able to secure visas and secure access for Israeli squash players to attend the tournament. And so as things stand at the moment, Israeli players are excluded from the tournament. The World Squash Federation president has also been involved. Lots of letters have been written backwards and forwards between the Israeli Squash Federation and the Israeli Minister of Sports along to the World Squash Federation president. But as things stand at the moment, Israelis don't have the right to attend that world championship. And just to remind people that Malaysia in the past has been punished for not securing access to Israeli sportsmen. In 2019, the International Paralympic Committee cancelled a swimming championship that was due to take place in Malaysia due to Malaysia's refusal to allow Israeli athletes to attend. And also, there's been a lot. Also, the international, as we know, the Judo Association has been sanctioned by the International Olympic Committee for Iranian judo participants who refused to participate against Israelis in the past. And we know that Qatar. Well, of course, now we have the Abraham Accords in place. But previously, when there wasn't any diplomatic relations with Qatar, they nonetheless guaranteed that Israeli players and spectators would be allowed to attend the World Cup next year, even though the countries didn't have diplomatic relations. So, some interesting things on the snippets front, and lots of action going on.
Absolutely. The story about the Shin Bet arresting 50 members of Hamas, that's an important one. Those are terror cells both in the West Bank and East Jerusalem. Tell us about this.
So it is important, and of course it's even more important in light of what we now know about that terrible murder of Ellie Kay and what really is brewing beneath the surface with regard to terror activities right literally under our noses. And the Shin Bet announced yesterday that it arrested more than 50 members of the Hamas cell, both in the West Bank and in East Jerusalem in recent weeks, that were involved in planning terror attacks on Israelis. And you know, this obviously comes from intelligence information that the Shin Bet has been following up on. Traditionally, this information takes some time to follow up on, and slowly but surely the Shin Bet does whatever they need to do in order to become sure that they've got sufficient information and evidence to hold against these individuals without allowing an attack actually to take place. And the interesting thing about this particular arrest was that the Hamas cell was apparently being led by a senior leader in the West Bank of Hamas, who is one of those people who was released from prison during the Gilad Shalit exchange. He was exiled to Turkey. Apparently, he continues to operate on behalf of Hamas today. And apparently, he has even put a lot of his own money into trying to, first of all, finance these cells, and second of all, to offer prizes to people who successfully carry out kidnapping. So there's quite a lot of activity going on, terror activity that's being organized within the West Bank. And this is just another example. Now, you know, this is a classic situation where the international community would say, why are you being so extreme in how you going into people's homes and arresting people who have yet to commit any crime? But as we mentioned yesterday, unfortunately, waiting for the crime to be committed is already too late, and we really have to operate ahead of the game. And this is a classic example of that.
Absolutely right. The first limit on Israeli prime minister has been passed by the Knesset. Now, this, I'm assuming, is about the agreement that was made.
Well, this is something that has been brewing for some time, to try to limit the amount of time that anybody could serve as prime minister. We know, for example, in the US that a president can only serve for two terms, being 8 years. And with some of the things that we've had to experience with regard to the way that people have behaved in positions of leadership, it has been deemed appropriate to try to limit the amount of time that anybody can serve as prime minister. And going along the same lines as the US has decided. And the bill that's currently before the Knesset and has already passed its first reading is that a prime minister will not be able to serve a term that is longer than 8 years. Now, I'm a great supporter of this idea. I think it is a good idea to limit how long people can be in that particular office. And so I think this is a very, very good idea. At the time that this particular bill was originally mooted, which was actually even during the time that former Prime Minister Netanyahu was in power, the idea was that it was going to exclude him, that he would effectively be grandfathered into the arrangement, that he would not be automatically excluded the moment this particular bill passed the Knesset. Obviously, that's no longer relevant. He's already out of office now, and it's not clear to me whether this bill would, once and for all, exclude him from returning to office because of the fact that he's already served more than 8 years as prime minister, or whether, in fact, that grandfathering arrangement that was discussed previously would still be in effect relative to him on a personal level. But be that as it may, I don't think it's really that important. I think what's important here is that there is a move towards limiting the amount of time that somebody can serve as prime minister. I think it also limits the extent to which people can become too comfortable in office. It also potentially reduces the extent to which people can be susceptible to corruption. So I think that this is a good idea. My only concern is that this may well be passed within the next few weeks and may well be on the law books as soon as possible, but that it might well then just as easily be repealed as soon as a new government takes office, because traditionally what happens is as soon as a new government takes office, which is a different political party from the previous government, there's a whole raft of legislation that they put forward right away in order to repeal any previous laws that might restrict the style that they wish to use in order to govern. And so just as easily as this seems to be passing, it passed the cabinet only the day before yesterday, and it passed the Knesset's first reading already a day later. So it seems to be moving pretty quickly up the road of the legislation, of the legislative process. But my concern is that it might be just as easy to repeal. But I think in principle...
Wouldn't something like this require more than just a simple majority? Wouldn't something like this in both directions require something like a two-thirds? It really does go to the heart of a democracy, doesn't it?
As far as I'm aware, it does not require a two-thirds majority. I think that the only items in the legislation that require more than a simple majority may well be items relating to the so-called arrangements law, which is effectively in Israel our equivalent of a constitution. In the absence of a constitution, we do not have a constitution, and therefore we have this law called the arrangements law, which covers issues that you would traditionally normally find within a constitution. And I think that there are some aspects of that law that require a super majority rather than a simple majority. And this does not seem to be one of those things. It seems to be pushed through. And I'm guessing that if it required a super majority at this stage in order to have it passed, it probably wouldn't be passed. I think that because of the very, very slimline majority that Naftali Bennett's government is governing at the moment, the chances are, I mean, what we find is that even when people do agree, the opposition does agree.
I was just going to say, surely this is something that all parties can relate to, even the opposition, because at least it limits, it limits Naftali Bennett.
It certainly does, and I would have thought that the opposition may well want to support this, but what I was about to say is that even when the opposition does support something in principle, they will be seen to vote against it just simply because it's being proposed by the government, and they want to effectively oppose everything that the government is proposing, which is a very counterproductive way of operating a democracy. But that's what we find right now. That's the position that we find ourselves in. And ironically, we've even found situations where previous laws that were implemented by the Likud government and needed to be needed to be renewed, and needed a majority to be renewed. All of a sudden, we found the Likud voting against the renewal, even though they were the instigators of the law in the first place, simply because the renewal is being proposed by the government. So that's unfortunately the situation that we find ourselves in our democratic world right now.
And the situation that we find ourselves in is that it is 8 o'clock. Anthony Reich, thank you. We'll chat to you tomorrow morning at 7:45. I'm Howard Feldman. This is your Morning Mayhem. It's 101.9 High FM. Good morning.